Hey listeners, welcome to Trust in Tech, where we have conversations with people helping the internet and society thrive. Alice here. This is the second episode in my 101 series, this one featuring Heather Grunkmeyer. Our conversation started out about how she broke into trust and safety as a career, but we talk about a lot of topics that hopefully resonate with you, including career pivots in general, identity and self-worth, mental health, and what surprised her when she finally started working in trust and safety. If you're here for the practical deep dives, we'll be back to that next episode, where Heather talks tech policy and what she's most proud of. As a reminder, the views stated in this episode are not affiliated with any organization, and they only represent the views of the individuals. Okay, here's Heather with advice on getting into trust and safety as a new career.
I think the most important thing, if you want to make a change, and whether that's into trust and safety or something else, is to get really clear on what you want. And what you don't want. The clearer you are on that, the more likely it is that you'll be able to find it, either by articulating it to those that you know, or just sort of putting it out there, not to be too woo-woo, but to the universe and saying, here's my vision of what I want and what I don't want to. And then the degree to which you can just network with folks in the field and learn from their experiences and really get the real deal. You know, what is it like? What do you love? And what are sort of the detractors? I'd encourage folks to do. You know, the world as we know it is changing at an ever-increasing rate due to innovation, and therefore the necessity of folks in our field and the nature of the things that we're going to be looking after is going to change in an ever-increasing rate as well. Just enjoy the ride and pivot as you need to and follow your heart and your passion. And if you find yourself in a spot where maybe you need to make a switch for whatever reason.
You said you want to tell your entire life story, so we're here for it. What do you want us to know?
Well, I started my career as a horse trainer, believe it or not. That was the first idea I had in life. And I chose that because horses are my greatest passion in life. Still to this day, I'm basically an 8-year-old little girl. And so I spent 2 years as a horse trainer on the East Coast. And then came to the realization that I wanted to have horses as my hobby, not my career, because when you sort of takes the fun out of it, your hobby then becomes what you're getting paid to do. So I had a few stops and starts until about 4 years later, the ripe age of 24, I got into tech recruiting through a series of moves that I made. And this was right before the dot-com bomb, not to date myself, but that was the time period. And it was super fun. I was placing people at Expedia and Microsoft and a handful of other clients. And everyone I placed at Expedia just loved it. They'd call me and say, thank you so much for this job. I love it here. And then the bottom of the tech world fell out and no one was hiring and my job became nothing but laying people off. So I placed myself at Expedia doing data entry for them. And a few years into that, I realized I really had a passion for improving the customer experience. And so I muscled my way into product management and spent 10 years there at Expedia doing all sorts of different things, ultimately to improve the customer experience. And it was awesome. And in 2017, I was selected a group of folks at Expedia, director level product people were selected to go to South by Southwest. And I just started to see with great clarity the harm that tech innovation had started to unlock, whether that was in the form of Cambridge Analytica or, you know, genocides in Myanmar, or social or mental health with teenagers and whatnot. And I just had this deep desire to use my time in product management to make products safer. I didn't even know what that looked like. I just knew it's what I needed to do. And that took a few years for the universe to deliver what I asked for. And I was offered a role at Rover, which is a marketplace for pet people. So if you have a pet and you need a dog walker, you can get one. So I had the good fortune of looking after the end-to-end trust and safety strategy for Rover. So it was 1 million people and their pets, and anything from making sure fraud is at a place that we're comfortable with to making sure the pets are safe and our sitters are qualified to provide good care, and that the owners owners and sitters meet our community guidelines. And at that time, we didn't even have deactivation policies or community guidelines or anything, but the leadership recognized that they, you know, trust and safety, especially for a community like Rover, is is the backbone of the future viability of the business, is that trust with your four-legged critter, who's often like a family member. Went in trust and safety, had 0 minutes of experience in it. But I wanted to do it and I just loved it. It was such a gift to spend 3 years working across the whole entire business and not only increasing safety, but trust too. And then just made the decision to open up my own shop and become an independent consultant to help other tech companies be safer too. That's my intention.
What was different than you expected? What did you learn? What was, surprising? What was, oh yeah, this is exactly what I wanted.
So I started in trust and safety in April 2020. So it's an interesting time in every which way. I think the policy work was the most surprising to me, how much I loved it, actually. I love the nuance of it and that it's never done. And that you're balancing trade-offs and have the first place to start is what are you indexing towards and away from? So you're always going to have to find that balance. Across a couple of dimensions as you're writing a policy, and then think through the edge cases that your policy doesn't solve for and allow for a way for those edge cases to still get handled and inform future iterations of your policy work. The most surprising, so that was my favorite piece of work that was sort of a surprise when I got trust and safety, but the biggest aha for me was the emotional tax that it took on me. I did not expect that. I knew inside of me, I wanted to use my time in product management to make things safer. And so I was so, so fortunate to have that role offered to me, especially when everything externally seemed so out of control during the pandemic. It really gave me a sense of purpose. But I had no idea the loops that I would be sent for, and even when we would be hiring people, I didn't feel like we were transparent enough in those interview loops around the real, the real deal stuff that you'll see. There's the obvious stuff, people go, oh yeah, of course that happens. But good people don't think like bad people, and there are bad people out there. And that was the piece I had no idea would cause such an incredible tax on me. Because we're all individuals with individual histories and triggers and coping mechanisms or lack of coping mechanisms, et cetera, tools in our toolbox. It's hard for companies, I think, to have support in place that's going to truly meet each individual's needs.
I wonder if it's something similar to what you said earlier with being a horse trainer, where if horses are really your passion, then actually doing it for a living is a little bit different. I feel like trust and safety is maybe slightly similar, where if your passion is like good communities and creating safe spaces and bringing people together and like the promise and potential of the internet for doing wonderful things for people, that's all like the good part that we get excited about. But then doing that, creating those communities for a living actually involves like a lot of other stuff that people don't think about. And you're like mucking out the stalls and you're
that's a good analogy.
Doing the same drills over and over or whatever else. I don't know. Maybe that's a far-fetched comparison, but I think there is something to it where the actual work can feel very different than what people think that it might be, especially in policy areas, which is where I hear a lot of people get like very starry-eyed, like, I'm going to make the internet better by creating equitable policies. And I'm like, you go do that for sure.
But we're going to be done.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah.
No, I think that's a good analogy. And it's, like I said, going from the outside in, maybe my original intention with my business was to help other tech companies be safer. So what I'd love to do is work with small to mid-size marketplace startups, take a look at the nature of their business that they have in place and say, all right, here's kind of what I would consider the most important things for the next 6 months from a trust and safety perspective. I have not been hired to do that. Which is, my two paying clients, one is doing lead generation, believe it or not, and I'm actually quite enjoying it. for a DSA product, and the other is with a company called Mission Omega, but they're a fraud consultancy firm. So what's funny about that is at Rover, fraud was my least favorite thing to work on because I just didn't care. It's just money. And we're talking about in real life stuff, but it was part of my job. I sort of looked at it as you got to eat your spinach. And we had some pretty big fraud fire drills that forced me to roll up my sleeves and get close to the metrics and what these bad actors are doing. And anyhow, so this client I have, they have a nonprofit as well, where 15% of their revenue goes to this nonprofit that's around preventing sex trafficking. And so I'm looking at this partnership thinking, all right, maybe this is the right balance for me. Maybe day to day being right close to those problems that I'm most passionate about in reality isn't something I'm actually able to do, you know, mentally, frankly. But working for an organization where I can see a direct line to my efforts feeding into an initiative aimed at something I'm very passionate about. Maybe another way to go around this next chapter of my life.
It's hard to find what that right balance is. I've been having conversations with a lot of people lately, and maybe this is relevant, maybe it's not. You and I think, are very similar. So I started out my career not as a horse trainer, but working in film, and wanted to make documentary films to change the world, and got a degree in film and worked as a documentary film editor for a few years and loved it. And, you know, my whole time in college, I've been working towards getting there. And then I moved to New York City and worked my way up and finally got to work for cool companies like Vice and MTV, and was editing documentaries on Hezbollah and, you know, just super interesting stuff. And I got so burned out. And, you know, the film industry in general can be quite exploitative, where because you're working for these cool companies, then they don't necessarily have to pay super well. The hours are really long. You're freelance a lot of the time, so you don't know when your next job is going to be. And I was just getting very stressed out by all of this, and I wanted more of a work-life balance. But then I couldn't figure out, after that chapter ended, who I was without this cool career, and like what really mattered to me and how I could make a difference in the world and make things better without you know, being able to answer the question. If people ask me, what do you do? Then I was like, oh, I edit documentary films, you know. And like after that, I was like, oh, I am working in a coffee shop trying to figure my life out. And, you know, it doesn't have quite the same ring to it. And I fell into tech, maybe similar to you. I started out on working in trust and safety and customer support at this little company, and fell in love with it. And for a while, it was like, you know, contract part-time work to pay the bills. So I found it really fascinating and interesting, but it wasn't, I didn't see it as a career. I didn't see it as like who I was or what I wanted to do with my life. And then 10 years went by and I was, you know, director and running two departments and like managing all of trust and safety and customer support. And I was like, oh, I guess this did end up as a career. I wasn't really thinking about it. You know, now, especially with people in trust and safety, and especially as I've had like a second job in trust and safety and, you know, involved in the industry a lot more, I see that same pattern where people think about their identity and their self-worth and their ability to like affect change in the world completely tied up with their jobs, and not only tied up with their jobs, but tied up with the company that they work for. And then that can be really problematic, because if you lose your job, or if your job becomes not healthy for you anymore, or, you know, if you have to pivot your career in one way or another, then you have to go through this existential crisis of like, who am I and what am I doing and how can I feel good about what I'm doing, but still not give myself up entirely. And when you care so much, which all of us do in trust and safety, then that caring really blurs the line for yep. what's healthy and what's not and what you're willing to give and what you should give. So I love what you said about, you know, maybe working for a company or thinking about work where you're doing the work, but you're not necessarily full-time, or you're doing the work that's adjacent to things that you care about so that you know it's contributing, but it's not all you do every day. I don't know. It's, I think a lot of people in the industry are thinking through this now, especially as, you know, trust and safety is an industry. Like, some of us have been doing it for a long time, but it's not a particularly mature industry, and we're still figuring out what it means and what a career in this means. So
yeah,
that was a long rant, but
no, I relate to that a lot. And in fact, you know, that frankly, I didn't listen to my inside of me was telling me, you're asking too much of yourself. This job you actually can't do with the tools that you have today. And I ended up needing to take a break. And I hired an executive coach because I was like, oh my God, I'm really passionate about what I do. I also don't want a mental breakdown. Mm-hmm. So how can those two things be true? And this has been the hardest and best year of my life. But what I really realized is so much is out of my control. You know, all I control is my effort and my attitude. And it's my responsibility to listen to my inside of me when it's saying, hey, and let it guide me to wherever mm-hmm. this life is going to go. And I think the beauty of working in tech for so long is, you know, everything is a testable hypothesis, just as I am as a human. I'm a testable hypothesis. I think this next step is the right one. And based on these observations of myself, mm-hmm. then you test and learn, and as you get information, pivot. And I think the it's been such a, like I said, the hardest and best year of my life. But I don't know what else I have to say about that, other than, I guess, to rewind to what we were chatting earlier about trust and safety is just going to keep changing in terms of the types of things we deal with.
Yeah, it's not getting easier. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Okay, bye.
If you enjoyed this conversation, please share this episode with your friends. It helps us continue making more episodes for you. Today's episode was produced by Talha Baig. I'm Alice Hensberger. Music by Zhao Shen. Special thanks to everyone at the Integrity Institute for their continued support.